morning, members. This morning we have, I'd like to bring the Environment Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee to order. We have one item of business today before us. It's House File 390. It's Representative Torkelson's bill that is the LCCMR funding. Members, it is a rather large bill. The intention is Ms. Thornton, the Executive Director of LCCMR, will present the bill, walk through it rather quickly. Many of you have already looked at the bill and had a chance to look it over. And then we'll take questions if you'll just let Mr. Exley or Ms. Zipko know if you have questions as we're going through. She'll write your name down. And then we'll begin to have the discussion take up the amendments as we go. It's our intention to be done at 10 o'clock. If for some reason the discussion goes longer, we'll come back 15 minutes after session adjourns tonight and finish the bill tonight. Any questions from members? Welcome, excuse me, members. We have the minutes before us. Representative Rarick, do you want to move the minutes of January 27th? Discussion, Representative Hansen.
Not in this point, but.
Okay, thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are adopted. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe you said this and I missed it, but the path on this bill, what's its route?
And actually, Representative Hansen, I did not. There's an amendment, I believe, and if the amendment gets adopted that deals with the workings of the LCCMR, similar to Lessard-Sams that went on the Lessard-Sams bill yesterday, this bill will need to go up to GovOps for that provision only. And then the bill will, when I say the whole bill will be before that committee, but Representative Sanders has told me in regards to both of these bills that he will discuss just the part that apply to GovOps, and then it will be to Ways and Means. And Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, is it your hope that these would go to the floor relatively soon? Or?
Actually, Representative Hansen, I have not talked to Representative Knobloch of what his timing is, and I'm not exactly sure on that. That's a good question. Historically, the Senate hasn't moved as fast. It would be kind of nice if we could, because there's some projects in here that would be great, that speed is of the essence for them. Other questions? Thank you. Good morning, Ms. Thornton. If you could identify yourself for the record and...
Do we want to move the bill, Mr. Chair?
Oh, I'm sorry. We can't have you talk yet. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to bring House File 390 before the committee and move that it be referred to GovOps.
Thank you. Ms. Thornton.
Mr. Chair, there is an author's amendment. Do you want to do that first, or we'll wait after?
We'll do the walkthrough of the bill. And Ms. Thornton, you know what? I'm going to change that. Representative Torkelson, why don't you explain your author's amendment? We're not going to move it now, but I do want you to explain it because, if I'm not mistaken, does it include, there was a numerical error, does it include that in the author's amendment?
Yes,
if it doesn't,
does.
We need that explained. Sure. Representative Torkelson.
I'm going to ask Ms. Taylor to explain the author's
amendment. Actually, we're going to wait. We're going to do the walkthrough, Ms. Thornton, do the walkthrough, and then we will have the amendment explained when the time comes. Ms. Thornton.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Susan Thornton, the director of the LCCMR Legislative Citizen Commission with Minnesota Resources. I'd like to have Mike Banker introduce himself.
I'm Mike Banker, assistant director of the LCCMR.
And Mr. Chair and members, just very quickly, in your packets is the summary of the biennial report, which we reviewed last week, and some other summary material for your information. I'm just going to point it out to you. One is a two pie charts on it, 8.5 by 11, that talks about the process, including that for the package in front of you of 65 appropriations, the commission received 152 proposals requesting approximately a total of $126.3 million. And of those, 76 came in for presentation for about total of $75 million, and 65 proposals were selected to receive recommendations for funding. and that is House File 390 that is before you today. So you can see the summary of our process, and the pie charts show the summaries of the types of projects recommended in the categories and also by recipient, their affiliation. Standard questions we usually get, we try and provide them to you right up front. Also, there's a legal sheet here which shows the summary by subdivision of all of the appropriations within, so you can get a snapshot on one page. And then, because many of these appropriations could be put in several different subdivisions because of their categories, we also have a summary by issue area. And then, Mr. Chair, and I'll get to the very last page when we get to the acquisition section. But Mr. Chair and author Torkelson had asked that we point you to the spreadsheet that's in your packet, and that is the document that we will be going through and going through very quickly. And I will point out that that also summarizes the proposals that came in, and then also it's lists them by subdivision and the line number within House File 390, and then this ENRTFID, that was its original proposal number. It's kind of the bingo number we worked with all summer and fall until we actually had a bill in place. I just wanted to give you a guide to that. With that said, Mr. Chair, I will begin with Subdivision 3, Foundational Natural Resource Data and Information. There are 19 recommendations totaling approximately $12.9 million. Subdivision 3A is the County Geologic Atlas. This one is to the University of Minnesota for approximately $2 million. This is the continued acceleration of these atlases. The Minnesota Geologic Survey does this part of the atlas. It's really the geology part of the County Geologic Atlas. Subdivision 3B is it's called Part B also, and it's to DNR, and they are the partner within accelerating the County Geologic Atlas. And this is really looking at the hydrology, the water quality, and quantity. So it's a two-step process that takes place. Subdivision 3C is continuing the Minnesota Biological Survey for $2.45 million. And this is the county-by-county plant and animal distribution survey, also providing technical assistance and data management. Subdivision 3D is the Minnesota Biodiversity Atlas for Enhanced Natural Resource Management, University of Minnesota, Bell Museum of Natural History for $340,000. This is an online tool and repository for biodiversity records to enhance research and guide field surveys and inform conservation planning. 3E is continuing to update the National Wetland Inventory for Minnesota. This will be the next to last appropriation before this updating will be able to be complete, and it's the enhancement of the wetland inventory maps. This phase is funded at $1.5 million. 3F is titled Creating a Statewide Wetland Bird Monitoring Program, and this is with Audubon, Minnesota for $146,000. And this is really to develop monitoring and protocols for wetland birds, game and non-game. 3G is the Minnesota Native Bee Atlas with a consortium of partners headed by the University of Minnesota for $790,000. And these are efforts to further enhance and continue some of the bee and pollinator surveys that have been funded and also engaging citizen scientists. 3H, reinduction and interpretation of bison in Minnesota State Parks with the Minnesota DNR for $600,000. And this is to assist in reintroducing bison to Minneopa State Park. They're already at Blue Mound State Park, and then also to help provide facilities and interpretive facilities. 3I is titled Endangered Bats, White Nose Syndrome, and Forest Habitat, and this is a collaboration of DNR, the University of Minnesota, and U.S. Forest Service to assess the summer forest habitat of bats and to with the goal to minimize forestry impacts and mitigate white nose disease impacts. 3J is assessing contaminants in Minnesota loons and pelicans. This is the third and final phase of this with the Minnesota DNR, and this came out of an initial commission initiative related to the Federal Natural Resource Damage Assessment Process and the Deepwater Horizon oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico several years ago. 3K is the movement and seasonal habitat of Minnesota elk, Minnesota DNR 200,000, and this is to improve elk management and enhance knowledge on the population size, the range, and habitat usage. Subdivision 3L is genetic and camera techniques to estimate carnivore populations, University of Minnesota, NRRI, and UMD, and this is using genetic sampling and remote cameras to monitor the distributions of various carnivores for better management. 3M is titled Turtle Population Dynamics in an Urban Lake. This is to the University of St. Thomas in collaboration with Three Rivers Park District, $250,000, to analyze the aquatic and terrestrial habitat that affect the use of urban lakes by a three-species turtle community and make specific recommendations for habitat and shoreline restorations. 3N is the digitization of the historic Gillian rough grouse research. Three decades of research, this will digitize those research files for further use by others. This is to Central Lakes College, $75,000. 3O is effects of grazing versus fire for prairie management, University of Minnesota and collaborators, $414,000, to compare the effects of conservation grazing and prescribed fire on tall grass prairie and the pollinators that live there. 3P, assessing the ecological impacts of the St. Anthony Falls lot closure. It's Minneapolis River Partnership, the St. Anthony Falls Laboratory, and the Mississippi Watershed Management Organization, $125,000, to assess the impact of the altered flow due to the closure scheduled for this coming June. 3Q is foundational data set characterizing historic forest disturbances. Impact, University of Minnesota, $200,000. This is to take advantage of new land, well, not new, but newly provided Landsat data from the past 40 years to look at timber harvesting impacts. 3R is the hydrologic effects of contemporary forest practices in Minnesota. University of Minnesota, $150,000. The goal here is to fill in some of the gaps of our current forest harvest guidelines. 3S is habitat mitigation for goblin fern conservation, a threatened species in Minnesota, to the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe for $61,000, and this is to assess their decline and the threats, including those impacts from invasive earthworms. Mr. Chair, I'll move on to Subdivision 4, Water Resources, where we have nine recommendations for approximately $3 million. And keep in mind, many of the items in the first subdivision are water resource related, so they could be in many subdivisions. 4A is University of Minnesota, $234,000, understanding water scarcity threats and values to improve management. And this is really to assess our water scarcity and abundance and water-related risks to industry, municipalities, and ecosystems, and the economic values of those changes in water quantity and quality. 4B is University of Minnesota, $281,000, a biofilm technology for water nutrient removal to be used to remove pollutants and stormwater runoff from polluted lakes, lagoons, and ponds. 4C is titled Biological Consequences of Septic Pollution in Minnesota Lakes, St. Cloud University, in collaboration with U.S. Geological Survey, $364,000. This is a second phase of previous work where the work was done in an assessment of contaminants and effects on fish health in rivers. This one is focused on lakes, different ecological systems. 4D is preventing phosphorus from entering water resources through drain tiles, University of Minnesota, $505,000. This potentially has a patent outcome from it, and this is using a novel hydrochar and a new nanocomposite, which is a new nanocomposite material made from biomass designed to absorb phosphorus, nitrogen, and pesticides. This will be a lab-scale engineered model that will hopefully work out in the field in later years. 4E is Southeast Minnesota Cover Crop and Soil Initiatives, Board of Water and Soil Resources, and other partners, $253,000, focused in Southeast Minnesota, where we have 1.3 million acres of highly erodible lands. This will promote cover crops, training, and provide training and education for local practitioners. 4F is Southeast Minnesota Subsurface Drainage Impacts on Groundwater Resources. Recharge, the U.S. Geologic Survey, $488,000 to assess the relationship between agricultural drainage and water flow within that unique karst geology in southeast Minnesota. 4G is a pilot using hydroacoustics to monitor sediment in Minnesota rivers. U.S. Geological Survey, $455,000. This is to pilot an acoustic Doppler velocity meter to assist the MPCA sediment reduction strategy, essentially uses sound waves to correlate to suspended sediment concentration. 4H is assessment of irrigation efficiencies in Benton County Soil and Water Conservation District, and other partners, $431,000. And this is to develop a decision support system to increase irrigation efficiencies. The thought being irrigation scheduling could essentially decrease water usage by up to 30%. 4I is the last one in this category. Again, this is a pilot, City of Shoreview, $54,000, pilot for water consumption and groundwater awareness, and provide increased water monitoring consumption on a biweekly basis rather than a quarterly to assess whether this could help with better in water conservation. Mr. Chair, Subdivision 5 is environmental education. There are five recommendations in this category, totaling approximately $1 million. The first one is 5A, and it's titled Promotion of Alternative Ammunition to Protect Wildlife from Lead Poisoning. And this is a consortium of the University of Minnesota Raptor Center, the Deer Hunters, DNR, and MPCA. It's a real coordinated partnership on this with outreach and workshops for alternatives to lead hunting with the goal to protect eagles and other wildlife from accidental lead poisoning caused by ingestion of ammunition. It's $132,000. 5B is connecting students with watersheds through hands-on learning. This is Minnesota Trout Unlimited. This is for $400,000. This is an expansion of experiential learning and using the trout in the classroom model for helping students learn about water quality, groundwater, and aquatic life. The goal is about 1,500 students at over 40 schools. 5C is the Zumbro River Watershed Recreational Learning Stewardship Sites, Zumbro Watershed Partnership, $230,000, and this is to develop at least six recreational educational sites on the Zumbro River, demonstrating various water quality elements. 5D is students engaging local watersheds using mobile technologies. This is Twin Cities Public Television and the 4H. $147,000, and this is experiential project-based educational understanding and protecting local water resources aimed at middle school students. 5E is titled Minnesota River Water Journey Camps, University of Minnesota, small project, $25,000 to help assist with and pilot some week-long summer camps for ages 6 through 11 on water and the Mississippi River. Mr. Chair, members, I'm moving on to Subdivision 6, Aquatic and Terrestrial Invasive Species. There are four main recommendations totaling approximately $6 million. 6A is continuing to fund the Minnesota Terrestrial Invasive Plants and Pest Center that was originally created last session. And this adds $5 million to that effort, focused mainly on research for prevention, detection, and control of terrestrial invasive species. 6B is phase two of Emerald Ash Borer, ecological and hydrological impacts. This adds to many of the other EAB appropriations that were approved last year. This one is focused on really, as it says, assessing the over 1 billion, the impacts potentially of over 1 billion ash, black ash trees in Minnesota were impacted by EAB, and what the impact would be on plant diversity and the hydrology. And that's $400,000. That will complete that that research project. 6C is $300,000, University of Minnesota, and this is to develop a biological control for Canada thistle, native invasive plant species in Minnesota. They'll be looking at a weevil that's already been approved and assessing that weevil life cycle and phenology for use in Minnesota. Builds on past successes with purple loosestrife, leafy spurge, and right now they're working on garlic mustard under current appropriation. 6D is preventing a new disease of pines in Minnesota. University of Minnesota, $371,000. Previously, when we approved this, we thought it was not in Minnesota. It was only in Wisconsin across the St. Croix. But since then, last November, the first case of invasive root rot has been found in southeast Minnesota. So this is disease surveys and guidelines for control.
Ms. Thornton, if you could just speed it up a little bit, I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Subdivision 7A, air quality, climate change, renewable energy, four recommendations, $3.3 million. 7A, analysis of Minnesota energy systems, develop future energy strategies to the Legislative Energy Commission for $1 million. 7B is renewable and sustainable fertilizers produced locally, University of Minnesota for $1 million. 7C is reducing emissions from open burning through biomass gasification, University of Minnesota in collaboration with DNR, $268,000. 7D is building deconstruction to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and solid waste, $801 million. And that's including Better Futures, University of Minnesota, and the Northwest Indian Opportunities Organization. Subdivision 8 is 11 to methods to protect, restore, and enhance land, water, and habitat, 11 recommendations for $4.6 million. 8A, prioritizing future management in North Shore trout streams, University of Minnesota, NRRI, $416,000. 8B is Title 13 counties propagating native plants and restoring diverse habitats. It's Martin County Soil and Water Conservation in collaboration with many other SWCDs, $495,000. 8C is preserving and protecting Minnesota native orchid species, University of Minnesota Landscape Arboretum, $167,000. 8D, acceleration of Minnesota conservation assistance, final assistance, Board of Water and Soil Resources for $1 million. 8E is the first of the Metro Conservation Corridors. This one is Friends of the Mississippi River for forest, prairie, forest, and savanna restoration, $276,000. 8F is to Great River Greening, $400,000. Assessing restoration techniques for bur oak and pollinator conservation. 8G is to the Minnesota State University Moorhead Science Center for restoration and monitoring in collaboration with DNR, $527,000. 8H is improving community forests through citizen engagement, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency, $800,000, and half of these dollars will be grants to communities. 8I is flood recovery on Sergeant Creek, Duluth, habitat restoration, City of Duluth, $300,000. 8J is shoreline protection for the Lower St. Croix, St. Croix River Association, $190,000. 8K is Redwood and Renville County's Outdoor Rec and Conservation Plan, $75,000. 9A is, Mr. Chair, into land acquisition, the last subdivision, for approximately $14 million, and I've been asked to call your attention to the graphic that's in your packet that gives you a visual as to where these acquisitions and conservation easements are. 9A is State Park and Trails, DNR, $1.5 million. 9B, Metropolitan Regional Park System, Acquisition, Metropolitan Council, $1 million. 9C is to DNR, $4 million. SNA, Acquisition, Restoration, Enhancement. 9D is Minnesota DNR, $3.3 million. Native Prairie Stewardship and Prairie Bank Easements. 9E is Minnesota Land Trust, another MACC partner for conservation easements at $515,000. 9F is Trust for Public Land for acquisition, again MACC. 9G, another MACC, Minnesota Valley National Wildlife Refuge, $500,000 for expansion of the refuge for U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. 9H is a 82-acre wildlife management area acquisition by DNR, $400,000. 9I is Mesabi Trail Development, St. Louis Lake and County's Regional Rail, $1 million. 9J is to Border Wire and Solar Resources and the Leech Lake Area Watershed Foundation for easements, forestry, and shoreline easements, $896,000. 9K is titled Conservation Easement Assessment and Valuation System Development at $250,000 with the University of Minnesota. Subdivision 10A is the administrative budget for both years of the upcoming biennium for the LCCMR, and then for contract reimbursement, 10B, DNR acts as the fiscal agent on behalf of the legislature for non-state agency projects. And then, Mr. Chair, that completes all of the recommendations totaling $46,383,000 from the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund in the Great Lakes Protection Account. And then, Mr. Chair, if you wish me to, also there is rider language starting online on page 31.
Ms. Thornton, Director Thornton, if you would do that. And then, did you mention Subdivision 10, the administration contract?
Mr. Chair, yes, I was talking fast.
Thank you. And if you could walk through the other language just real quickly.
Yes, Mr. Chair, very quickly, I will. Members who have seen this before, a lot of this is pretty standard that you've seen every year. Starting on page 31 of the bill, this just outlines the availability of the appropriations. All of these appropriations are available for the 2 years, either 2 years of the biennium, even though they're appropriated in the first year, or sometimes we write period of 3 years or 5 years, depending on the nature of the appropriation. Subdivision 12, data availability requirements, that's standard. Subdivision 13, project requirements, standard rider language.
The rest, Ms. Taylor, I think is pretty self-explanatory.
Mr. Chair, the only thing I'm going to point
out
to
you. Go ahead, Ms. Taylor. Oh. I'm sorry, Ms. Director Thornton.
Okay.
I'm thinking I've got Ms. Taylor on my mind that's got to explain something further
Mr.
down the
Chair,
line.
Mr. Chair, I always happy to have Ms. Taylor answer for me.
No, Director Thornton.
Page 39, this is a statutory change to our peer review process for research projects. We're bringing it into this century. This language originally had us convening a panel, and now we do almost everything electronically. It's a much greater efficiency, and we're actually getting better peer review. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Director Thornton, and appreciate you going through at the pace you did as we try to move along. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've got a concern that was brought to me by one of our local agriculture guys up north. On page 19 of the bill, 1912 through 1930, we have a fairly vigorous business within the state that's in the process of producing the seeds and so forth. He's concerned about the collection and propagation if the Martin County SWCD is going to be going into the business of growing plants and seeds and selling them. I think some people in the business community who are specializing in this sort of stuff have some serious questions. So I have some questions about the work plan and so forth, and I know that we've talked about this in LCCMR. I'm on the committee, but I need to make sure that we're going down the right path here.
Well, thank you, Representative Fabian. And if I'm not mistaken, Rich Perrine, are you in the audience? I thought there was a chance that you were going to be in attendance today. He's from, yes, if you could come down to the testifier table, that would be great. Mr. Perrine is the project proposer, and if you could come forward. And then I do know there's at least one member of the public that wants to testify in regards to this specific appropriation. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Perrine, for being here. You know, a lot of these growers have worked very, very hard to develop their business model and so forth. So I'm just kind of relaying some concerns that have been brought to my attention, and I'd like you to explain further what your intentions are. Thank you.
Mr. Perrine, if you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Mr. Chair and committee, my name is Rich Perrine with the Martin Soil and Water Conservation District. This is a project that continues some of the work we've done already. We've been working with Fetters Prairie Nursery down in Faribault County. They've asked, we asked them which species that they might benefit if we would propagate them to the point where there was enough seed supply where they could use it, and smooth aster was one that they mentioned that they could use. We've managed to collect probably about 2 grocery bags full of seed heads from that one this year. So our project basically is to get the seed supply up to the point where we can provide it to the growers and vendors to make it available to the public. We're trying to work focused on the species that aren't used. We're working on local ecotypes, and so that species from a long distance from the restoration site do not need to be used. We like to keep it as local as we can. We try to do our restoration projects under the DNR guidelines, which tries to stay within using a seed source within 25 miles, and we've tried to do all of our collecting within 25 miles of where we're propagating, and then not go beyond 25 miles when we reuse those species.
Can I ask you to redefine we propagate? You're here on behalf. Are you the local? If you could give us your title too, okay. Mr. Perrine.
Yes, I'm a technician with the Martin Soil and Water Conservation District, and
The question was, you referred to we propagate, and I thought you were here on behalf of the SWCD.
Right, the SWCD. We partner with several other SWCDs. We get guidance from DNR, other agencies, organizations that have an interest in native habitats. We're working with both native prairie habitats.
Mr. Perrine, I get that. Who's the we that's going to propagate?
That would be the Martin SWCD working in conjunction with landowners who have plots, and normally we're trying to, on more rare species, work with landowners who have perpetual conservation easements so we can put them directly into protected
Mr.
land.
Mr. Perrine, excuse me. I get all that. Okay. You're going into something where I don't want you to answer. I want to know who's going to propagate the plants, the actual propagation of the plants. You said we are going to propagate them. Is the SWCD, is Martin County SWCD going to go into that business now? That's my question.
Okay. To get the basic seed supply that's needed to get it to vendors, we, the Soil and Water Conservation District, in our county will be propagating those species.
Thank you. Representative Fabian, follow up.
Mr. Perrine, and I'm sorry if I've mispronounced your name. Thank you for being here. I'm sure that it's difficult. What's the connection to the 25 miles? You talked about that a little bit. Can you help me there?
Mr. Perrine.
Sure. Mr. Chair, committee member. The guidelines from DNR point toward keeping the seed source as close to the restoration site as possible. They've research has shown you get the best survival and the and you match the native habitat better by keeping your seed sources close to the restoration site as possible. And so we're following those guidelines that are given to us from DNR and some other partners that believe that strategy helps. And we've found that to be most effective because when we've used seed sources on our restoration projects that come from further away, we don't have the success and they don't match the habitat that we're restoring. Sometimes the actual species themselves, the different genotypes don't even look exactly the same.
Representative Fabian.
Well, Mr. Chair, I kind of it renews my concern that government is getting into the business of this, and I'm concerned about people who are working to try to establish businesses along this line, and I know it's being done with good intentions. Don't get me wrong, okay? But I still have some heartburn on this one.
Well, thank you, Representative Fabian. And Mr. Breen, I'm going to ask Mr. Schaefer, I believe Joe Schaefer from Minnesota Native Landscapes, and if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Breen, your SWCD has worked with Mr. Schaefer. Mr. Schaefer, if you could come forward to testify. And Mr. Schaefer, I'm going to tell him that you don't have the typical native prairie landscape contractor hairdo that looks like a hairdo of somebody that would have participated in crashed ice last week. So first of all, if you could tell us how you got the hairdo you have, and if you could, but before you talk about your hairdo, you got to tell us who you represent.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me okay? Okay, so my name's Joe Schaefer. I'm the owner of a company called Minnesota Native Landscapes. We're in the ecological restoration and plant propagation business. We're a member of the Minnesota Native Grass and Wildflower Producers Association, and I happen to be the chair of the Native Grass and Wildflower Committee for Minnesota Crop Improvement Association. So I'm not here today speaking on their behalf. I just want to make that clear, but I just am involved in this business pretty heavily and have been for a number of years. Just to get back to the haircut thing, I'm a participant in the crashed ice skating race that took place last weekend, and it's just a haircut that I give myself to kind of stay on task a little bit because I train hard and work hard for that. So,
well,
anyway, that's
Mr. Schaefer. Congratulations! I understand you were one of the top 10 finishers of the U.S. participants, and if I'm not mistaken, we're at least a decade older than anybody else to participate.
That's right. That's all true. Yeah.
So we're done with the lighthearted stuff.
All right, yeah.
You heard Mr. Perini. He mentioned some really good stuff about wanting to do some good things. Representative Fabian's mentioned some concerns about collaboration within the existing industry. If you want to speak to that, Mr. Schaefer, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. You know, first of all, I just want to say that, you know, obviously we appreciate and value the significance of the things that the environmental needs, the trust fund and the LCCMR contribute to the resources and, the betterment of the life of the people and health of the natural resources of the state. And obviously it has a tremendous impact on our business. And, you know, we can't say enough about the good parts about that. The reason why my phone rang off the hook a little bit for the last few days about subdivision 8 part B is just simply that you know, every time that we as producers get the indication or feeling that one of the government units is going to get into our business and start producing these things with government money to compete directly with our private industry, which is quite robust in the state, actually. You know, we have producers in all corners of the state, very high levels of expertise and capabilities in producing these plant materials. We just are just questioning the need for this money to be spent in this manner. So I just would like it to be looked at a little closer as to what the money is used for. We certainly are, as an industry, are capable of collaborating with SWCDs and question. These SWCDs do tremendous work around the state. There's some great work that gets done up in Crow Wing County and on all these counties that Mr. Preen works in. And, you know, we see the value in it, of course. Obviously, it's great things, but just treading on kind of some sketchy ice there. Just would like to ask that we just keep that in check for in the sake of the private industry that currently exists in Minnesota already that can support this topic.
Well, Mr. Schaefer, my questions center around my experience with some of these natives that are really important. The local ecotype, I know you get all that, and the 25 miles is really a good thing that we keep them close. But some of these species are extremely hard to propagate, and some are relatively easy. My concern is that this kind of work should be done in collaboration with people like you that have decades of experience in it. And when Representative Fabian brought his concern that his local producer brought forward about, here's an SWCD that says we are going to propagate it, we are going to buy shovels and trowels and trays. Some of this stuff has to be grown in a greenhouse because it has to be grown for a year and a half. It may need to be in a humidity-controlled environment. I know when I stopped by your place to pick up that bag of seed, I was impressed with the humidity-controlled structure you have and all the different kind of native seeds. My concern is that this is a great project, but it looks like it maybe could be collaborated with the existing industry a little better to make sure we're spending the money in the right way. Do you have comments on that, Mr. Schaefer?
Yeah, I do, Mr. Chair. Thanks. You bring up some interesting points. You know, there's a lot of plants and different plants that we use for restoration purposes that are in pretty good commercial full-scale production already. And, you know, one of the things that I see being very beneficial from this proposal here would be, you know, maybe developing some of the less understood plants and developing ways to propagate them and make them more commercially available so our, you know, our restoration efforts are more complete and thorough. There's just a lot of opportunities, thousands of plants out there, and, you know, we typically deal in, you know, a few hundred or whatever. So definitely that kind of, you know, helping us research and certainly, like, one thing that I read into in this proposal is that they could help us with maybe some of the genetics, making some of these things available to us. But I think that it just goes back to the growing it out and having the capabilities and expertise to be able to propagate these things and develop them should be left in the hands of the people that are already doing it and have been doing it for a long time.
Okay, Mr. Schaefer, I've got a few people with questions, including Director Thornton would like to make a comment. But what I would just ask members and Director Thornton, I guess, would be my question. We might be able to move this thing along rather quickly. I'm wondering if before this goes to Ways and Means, if we could have a rework on the work plan to see if we can clarify the collaboration. Mr. Preen mentioned he was going to be collaborating. He specifically mentioned one specific nursery, and I don't want the collaboration to be with an entity. I get uncomfortable having been in the public sector contracting business. It gets me real nervous when we talk about collaborating with somebody already and we're talking about state money and all that kind of stuff. So what I would ask is that if we will reach out to the appropriate people at the industry, and Mr. Schaefer, it won't be one just you. You came here as a citizen, but we'll reach out to the industry. Mr. Perrine is nodding yes. I'm going to ask him to come back up and confirm that we'll work on this work plan in the interim before it goes to Ways and Means. I'll collaborate with Representative Hansen and that we will reach a satisfaction that this project is going in the direction. It's very well worded from 1912 to 1930. I don't know that anybody wants to disagree with those intentions. But just we want to get in into some of the more intricate things. To that point, I have, and if you have additional questions with that, Mr. Preen, maybe if you could just confirm that your willingness to work on that. And then if Ms. Thornton, we'll let Ms. Thornton comment. So, Mr. Schaefer, you can back down for a second. You may have to stick around. There are probably going to be questions. Mr. Preen, if you could confirm your willingness to collaborate with the industry on a broad basis.
Right. Rich Bryan with the Martin Soil and Water District again. Yeah, I just want to emphasize that we do not sell seed, and we do not intend to sell seed. Our goals are to provide the seed sources that we develop to the local growers and vendors so that they can utilize the work we've done. And we do have a fair amount of expertise at our disposal to do that. Also want to mention, he mentioned Crow Wing County. They have specified definitely they're going to be working with their local nursery to do work. And and probably Mr. Schaefer's company as well. And so we definitely, in the parts of the state we're working in, we'd like to partner with those in the business that have the expertise, and we definitely want the expertise that these companies have. We've gone to the universities for their background and that.
Okay, thank you. Director Thornton.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to offer up what you suggested.
So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hausman. Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think you're on the right track here that the public purpose may be propagating those plants that aren't profitable, that are unique or have a small niche and maybe in certain areas. So I think, Mr. Chair, if you're on the track of talking about them coordinating with an association, I'm a little nervous about naming any particular companies moving forward on this and just dealing with it in the work plan.
Thank you, and we'll work together on this. And if I'm not mistaken, both Representative Lilly and Representative Wagenius, who both also serve on LCCMR, are also in the audience today. So the folks that worked on this and got on this are hearing this testimony also. So thank you. Representative Johnson, did you still have a point? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Prine, I'm new to this process, and so can you really, the application process, can you briefly describe how you work through that?
As far as development?
Mr. Prine.
Okay. Mr. Chair, as far as developing the work plan?
Yeah.
Mr. Prine.
We've worked with, so far, most of our work's been in Martin County, but we have a cooperative weed management area that involves 10 South Central Minnesota counties, and so we've been doing similar work with those counties already. We had interest through an organization called the Prairie Enthusiasts to add Nicollet County to our plan, and then we had interest from both Crow Wing and Lake counties for the type of work, because they had been involved a little bit. They've been actually having students do some of the grower work in Lake County, and they were interested enough that we included them in the work plan. Our board of supervisors said, we've got some expertise built up here, let's spread it around the state so that other people can utilize what we've learned.
Thank you. Thank you for coming forward. We appreciate it. I know you drove up just yesterday on kind of a last minute this morning. Well, thank you, Director Thornton. That was kind of, but we really appreciate your flexibility and willingness to work and recognize the great work that the SWCD is doing. I know you collaborate with the industry, and we just want to make sure that's noted. Members, we're going to move to amendments. The first amendment, we're going to do the author, Representative Torkelson. I believe you have the A-12.
Thank you, Mr.
I'm sorry, the A-7.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You have the A-7 presented as an author's amendment, and I would like to ask Ms. Taylor to explain the amendment.
Okay, I was getting ahead of myself about 17 minutes ago when I was thinking already of Ms. Taylor. The people in the audience know that I tend to skip a lot of things, and thank you for bringing me back on task. Ms. Taylor, to the A-7, if you could explain it.
Chair, Mr. Chair and members, I'm speaking, as you said, to the A-7. The first instruction on line 1.2 removes some language for the county biological survey appropriation that limits DNR's expenses to what's in the work plan. Lines 1.3 and 1.4, this would require the Raptor Center as part of the lead shot appropriation to consult with the DNR. Line 1.5 is just a technical correction. It reduces the number of acres, and I understand this was just a typo. And then lines 1.6 through 2.13, these just extend various appropriations, and this is fairly typical. We do this pretty much every year.
Questions to the A-7. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Torkelson. The first two, the deletion and the modification, I have a couple questions for. It looks like the rest of it's somewhat technical, but on page 3, limiting the expenses limited. Is this something the commission came forward with, or is this the deletion of lines 31 through 34? Could you maybe explain why we're eliminating that review of or that limitation on expenses?
Representative Torkels.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen, this was an agency request.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, was it from the DNR or from the Biological Survey or from the LCCMR?
If I'm not mistaken, Representative Hansen, the DNR is a responsible party in doing this paperwork, Director Thornton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen and members.
You got to speak into the mic.
I'm
loud.
Sorry,
thank
Mr.
you.
Chair, Representative members. DNR did not, well, this is, I had not seen this deletion before. This was added by the commission. There was a concern by the commission about the what's called direct and necessary administrative expenses in the proposal for this project.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is the ongoing direct and necessary debate that
yes.
we've referenced before that's been going on for a long time. And so, Mr. Chair, Ms. Thornton, this is not the lines 31 through 34 were put in by the commission, but now the Department of Natural Resources wants those removed. So you guys are still in conflict.
Director Thornton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, as I explained to the Department of Natural Resources, the work plan has to come before the members for approval. Anyhow, it was really, the language is not necessary because it's still the meaning is still there.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Ms. Thornton, so if this amendment passed, this particular thing would be moot anyway because there's existing statute that requires the review? Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chair, I don't know what the final commission action would be on the review, but yes, correct.
And then,
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Torkelson, the next one on 13, the Raptor Center, in consultation with the Department of Natural Resources, is that a request from DNR, or is that a request from the Raptor Center, or could you maybe just explain the reason, rationale for that? And Ms. Thornton, if you have any comment on it.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is basically a request from the chair.
Which,
my understanding.
Which one? Where
we're
I'm
on
sorry.
The
Raptors.
The proposal to, in consultation with the DNR. Yeah, excuse me, Representative Hansen, Representative Torkelson, when I saw the project, I saw the University of Minnesota, and I picked up the phone and asked the DNR if they were aware of that, and they said, yes, we've talked to the university about this project. I said, well, I don't see that mentioned. Are you okay with that being entered? So I just put it in an author's amendment. I asked Representative Torkelson if he would incorporate it in his author's amendment because I thought it wasn't controversial to note that we have a Department of Natural Resources that works with bullets and shooting and those kinds of things. So that's where I was coming from. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to find out where things come from. Sometimes things just appear, and I don't. We want people to be talking with. We do want people talking with each other. So.
Yeah. Well, that's where I was coming from. Additional comments on the A7. We do have an A12 that's an amendment to this amendment. Representative Torkelson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to add that I was happy to accept your suggestion and support it fully.
Well, thank you. I was actually looking at something else. Apologize. If I'm not mistaken, Representative Dill, you have the A12. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an amendment to the A7, the A12. And this would delete, as it says on 1.4, delete the lines 21 through 32 and then move the appropriation to a previously placed in statute, the Minnesota Trap Shooting Facility Grants, which pretty much everyone knows that that's a project that numerous members have been working on and have very broadly and bipartisanly supported. More than 6,600 kids participating in that statewide. The reason I'm doing this is because, I mean, we've got to the point of about enough is enough on this. When you go in to buy, first off, if you were born before 1979, and that's me, and a lot of us, you don't have to have a firearm safety certificate. If you're born after 1979, you have to take training. Now, I just checked with Mr. Meyer, and there's no training. There's no part of the curriculum, apparently, that has to do with the use of non-toxic shot or for that matter, lead shot in the curriculum. If we really want to reach out to people about this, people who are actually using these things, we're going to put something in the curriculum so that people after 1979 or after this day forward will hear from that during their firearm safety, rather than going on and on and on and on and on about spending little tiny amounts of money on this issue. This is not something that isn't recognized. You can go into any Walmart, any sporting goods store, any place that sells ammunition, and all the ammunition is segregated. Every document that's given out about by the federal government, by ammunition suppliers, and all those folks talk about this issue at all times, and pretty much any sportsman, except possibly these youngest ones, which could be done almost effortlessly through the firearms training, know about toxic shot, or non-toxic shot, I should say, and the use of it and where it should be done. And then further, we've used it. We have many restrictions. Federally, I started shooting non-toxic shot, I think, in 1984 when it became law. And so that is the reason for removing this from the bill. It's a tiny amount of money. It's going to have zero impact, in my opinion, on the outcome of this issue, and that is the amendment.
Representative Hansen.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I'm just so the committee knows, I was asking the chair about the constitutionality potentially of this, if it meets the requirements of the lottery constitutional amendment. So I grabbed the book here. I don't know, Ms. Thornton, if you could maybe address that. I, as Representative Dill knows, we co-authored the bill last year, so I'm supportive of that. I just want to check if this is legal. And then also, if Ms. Thornton could, if it is legal, just any, maybe you mentioned this in the overview, but if there's any money on the bottom line from cancellations or any other reserve.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Representative Dill, I think what we will do is we will ask Ms. Taylor just to quickly tell us some of the underlying constitutional about this amendment. This amendment, the LCCMR amendment, is very broad when we think of it in comparison to Lessard-Sams. But Representative Dill, maybe we need to rethink potentially where the money is actually going. You raised a number of good points about where it shouldn't be going. But Ms. Taylor, if you have some comments on the constitutionality.
Mr. Chair, members, as you stated, this particular fund, unlike some of the other constitutionally dedicated fund, is broader. I don't know if you have your language handy, but I can read what it says. It says the assets of the fund shall be appropriated by law for the public purpose of protection, conservation, preservation, and enhancement of the state's air, water, land, fish, wildlife, and other natural resources. And for the purposes of the amendment, other natural resources is defined, and I don't have that in front of me, but it includes the outdoor recreation system of the state, which is the state parks, etc.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Well, Representative Dill, actually, it looks to me like it applies very well, and you're within those lines. Representative Dill.
Well, it's really a small amount of money in the scheme of that program that we're going to be working through in the future. I'd like to leave the amendment the way that it is. I'd like to leave the amendment the way that it is for the time being. And if it is a constitutional issue, at some point I would come back, and essentially the effect would be really to remove line. If in the future, in future hearings or at some point in the Senate, that line 1.5 through 1, line 1.5 through 1.9 is a constitutional problem, and I don't believe at this point that it is, we'd really revert back to line 1.4 and put a period after 32, just delete the section.
Okay, thank you. To the Dill amendment to the amendment. Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, is any representative from the Raptor Center in the room by any chance? Since we're
since we're deleting their project and giving it to someone else, if somebody were in the room, I wish we at least had the opportunity to.
Is anybody here from the Raptor Center? Is anybody here that wants to speak to this specific amendment to the amendment? Go ahead, if you could come forward, sir. If you could identify yourself for the record and give us some short testimony. Go ahead.
My name is John Moriarty. I'm the wildlife manager for Three Rivers Park District, and we're one of the partners on the project with the Raptor Center, and the DNR named game program is also one of the partners. So the DNR has been involved in the project all along. I don't think there's enough. We're not saying that the project is better than going through the youth training, but right now there aren't materials for the youth firearm training that talks about toxic shot. And most of the toxic shot information that's out there is based on waterfowl hunting and shotgun pellets and not on the rifle ammunition. So it's just a way of developing the materials that can be used in the youth programs. So it is an important thing to get that step forward, to do it on a voluntary basis, so there doesn't have to be any laws in the future like the federal government did when they banned the use of lead ammunition for waterfowl. So it is an important way of getting the materials that could be used for the youth training. So part of it is just getting better training materials out there.
Thank you. Representative Dill.
Well, thank you. So, Mr. Chairman, when the Environment Finance Bill comes here, I'll have at least an amendment to put into the curriculum of the DNR that they need to have some pieces in there about a non-toxic shot and its effect regarding bullets, meaning rifle-type bullets, and, of course, also lead non-toxic pellets as well. And I understand that, and that's a good point, and that's the reason I met with Mr. Meyer just for a few seconds outside to make sure I knew what I was talking about. That's usually a good thing around here. And I recognize that. I just wondered also, can you discharge any firearms in the Three Rivers Park District?
We can. We do have special shotgun deer hunts, and at this point we're encouraging people to use non-toxic shot. We use the prototypes mm-hmm. of the pamphlets that the Raptor Center put out and handed them out to our participants this year, but we're not going to go beyond state law, so we're not going to tell people they have to use copper, but we encourage it. Thank you.
Was it Rep. somebody over here? I apologize. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I mentioned the constitutionality, and I think, Representative Dill, you've talked about the upcoming bills, and I know there's going to be legislation coming for funding this through a variety of other sources. The other piece of this is that, kind of just like we're going to be seeing on some of the other amendments, we've had folks that have gone through the process here, responded to a request for proposal, have brought this forward. It's gone through the commission. It is not a lot of money, but it is an important issue, and I think deleting it is a mistake. So I'm going to vote against your amendment. I would hope that, and we maybe get an answer from Ms. Thornton if there is any money on the bottom line, if this is constitutional, if you want to put that in. I think there's two points to this. One is the sports facility grants, and the other is not having the study, and I think having the study and bringing more science is always better than less, and this made it through the process, and I would hope it would go forward.
I would just like to clarify, when I looked through this, when I heard the questions asked, I didn't look at this as much as a study, as an effort, as you and it's Sister Reinhart. I'm sorry, we missed it because we didn't have you on the testifying.
Moriarty.
Okay, thank you. It was not, this is about spending $132,000 that I got to respect Representative Dill's point. When we have our finance bill, we'll instruct them to do what you just said, and we'll take $132,000 and put it to the fastest growing sport in high school sports today that's getting people back in the outdoors. To the A-12. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The amendment to the amendment is adopted. To the A-7. Further discussion? All those in favor of the A-7 say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The A-7 is adopted. The next amendment is the A-1. That's my amendment, members. Ms. Taylor, if you could, you know what, Mr. Hubinger, I believe you are here. Do you want to, let's see. Mr. Hubinger, you were here yesterday to explain it. Why don't you just be available for questions? Ms. Taylor, if you could explain the A1 amendment.
Mr. Chair, members, the A1 amendment is similar to what was adopted yesterday on the Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Fund bill. This would change the hiring authority for the staff of the LCCMR from the commission itself to the LCC.
Okay. Questions, members, to the A1? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I took a look at the statutes, and there is a difference between what was done yesterday and what's being proposed here. The underlying statute yesterday had the authority being, upon coordination with the LCC, the council may appoint staff. So the Outdoor Heritage Bill, which we passed yesterday, had that change in it, directing clear authority to the LCC. The change here that's being proposed is greater because the authority is direct in existing law. The commission may appoint legal and other personnel and consultants necessary. So the LCC, as it mentioned, the authority rests with the commission. And maybe if Mr. Hubinger is here or if someone else is here, if we can see how this has actually been implemented by the LCCMR.
Mr. Hubinger, if you could identify yourself for the record, and I'm assuming you heard the question, but if you need it repeated, let us know. Otherwise, just go directly to the answer. Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Greg Hubinger with the Legislative Coordinating Commission. The last time that the LCCMR went through the hiring process for the director, the LCC coordinated that process. It organized a nonpartisan staff group that conducted the initial interviews, and then a subgroup of the LCCMR met and conducted the second interviews and made a recommendation of a finalist to the full LCCMR, which endorsed the recommendation of that single candidate. So this is a more major change than what has been used for the Lessard-Sams Council.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Hubinger, were there any difficulties with that process? Is there any public outcry calling for this?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, there were no challenges during that last hiring process.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Hubinger, have there ever been any challenges with the hiring? I mean, the LCCMR and its predecessor, the LCMR, have a longer track record. To your knowledge, has there been any difficulty?
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, not that I'm aware of.
Representative Hansen, follow up. All those in favor of the A1 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The A1's adopted.
Mr. Chair, I think Representative Hausman was actually had a question.
I'm sorry, you had a question, well, Representative Hausman?
I think we've passed the amendment now.
Representative Hausman, I saw Representative Hansen look down the line, and I couldn't see you, and I didn't see him look to me that someone else was wanting to speak. So we're going to revert back to it, and we will, if you want to have discussion or want to ask for a roll call on that amendment, I certainly will acknowledge that. Representative Hausman.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I don't even know who I could address this to, because the difference in what we're talking about today is a group that is largely made up of legislators. So in a sense, this group of legislators is taking a hiring authority away from an established group of legislators who have been assigned a particular responsibility. It feels, I mean, there's a sense in which it's so different from the discussion that we had yesterday. The makeup of that group is, and its history is so different.
Well, actually, Representative Hausman, both groups have a majority of citizen members. In the LCCMR, there are 10 citizens and I'm sorry, the LCCMR has how many? In LaSalle-Sams, it's 8 citizen members and 4 legislators. And on LCCMR, if you could identify yourself for the record and tell us the makeup of it.
Mike Banker, LCCMR Assistant Director. The LCCMR is made up of 7 citizen members and 10 legislators. 5 are from the Senate and 5 are from the House.
Thank you. And that's to Representative Hausman's point. Yeah, Representative Hausman.
And so, Mr. Chair, especially, I think we asked earlier, have you had any conversation with? I mean, has there been conversation with legislators who serve on LCCMR about the advisability of this? I mean, in a sense, we're passing their bill and we're taking some authority away from them at the same time. I just didn't know what sort of conversation has gone on around this issue with the legislative members of the LCCMR.
Representative Hausman, where I was coming from, having just sat in on the hiring process at LaSalle-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council, I was very uncomfortable with the role both the legislators and the citizens played on a hiring process when we had no training as HR. And granted, I personally spent over 30 years as a small business owner and know a little bit about hiring and what we need to be careful of. But the testimony I heard in that hiring process really made me nervous for folks were doing hiring that were not qualified to know what they needed to do. This requires input from the group, but it clarifies no different than other nonpartisan staff around here. Ms. Knight, Mr. Hubinger, Pat McCormick, those kinds of people are hired through the LCC. The LCC is led by, if I'm not mistaken, it alternates annually between the Speaker of the House and the Senate Majority Leader. They're the, would it be safe to say they're the Chief Executive Officer of the LCC. That's the group, and actually, if I'm not mistaken, under the old process, they were involved, but it was unclear who actually was doing it. And when we have citizens who are appointed on a board to serve for the purpose of evaluating environmental projects like LaSalle-Sams and Outdoor Heritage or LCCMR, they're not brought forward on that board because of their HR experience or expertise. And unfortunately, they could say something that is absolutely wrong or make something that's supposed to be in private not done, or they could mistakenly talk to the wrong person. This is about good government and setting a process. This is not about who's doing what job or whatever, and if people want to have that discussion, we can have that discussion. I'm okay with that because I am really a straight shooter. And that process that I went through, and Representative Hansen was part of it, unfortunately, we couldn't even both be part of the small group because then it made us open meeting law problems. This is about good government, and if you've got some ideas on how to make it better about good government, I'm okay with that. But I'd rather have the citizens that are on those two boards working on what they're supposed to do, and the folks like Mr. Hubinger, Pat McCormick, Mr. Shepherd, and Ms. Knight. We don't even hire our own legislative assistants, folks, just so the people in the audience know. We don't hire anybody in here as legislators. We certainly shouldn't sit on a board and hire an executive director with all that's involved. So, Representative Hausman.
And, Mr. Chair, it's precisely because of, in a sense, we're moving into human resources, you know, personnel decision making, and doing it quickly in an amendment that I have been so cautious about this. In this case, Mr. Hubinger is not there, but I haven't been on this committee or LCCMR, but at least what I read in the papers, I mean, there's been a history of conflict around hiring and firing, and so are we playing a role in moving staff to what was perhaps a demonstrable hostile work environment? In other words, what we're doing today is a personnel decision as legislators, and so we have to be very careful about the impact of our decision here for precisely the reason you said. These can be awkward situations.
Representative Halsman, you and I both do serve on Ways and Means. This bill is going to Ways and Means. I strongly encourage everyone on this committee to meet with Mr. Hubinger, Ms. Thornton, or Mr. Johnson, the two executive directors of both of those organizations, if you have input and thoughts on if this amendment can be made better. This amendment was brought to me by folks that had very concern about the process, and they weren't partisan legislators that had the concern. So I'm open. This particular part of it will go to GovOps because of this amendment to discuss, because it affects a commission. So this amendment will be discussed in GovOps, and if folks have input on that or serve on that committee, we can have further discussion on this. But I think it makes it a better process, Representative Halsman. I'm certainly willing to continue to work on it if it needs tweaking.
I unfortunately don't serve on Ways and Means or GovOps, so I wanted to.
If you have thoughts on it, Representative Halsman, and I can help you with it, I'm open to that. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And yesterday I asked the question I'll ask now about prospectivity, that this is the way this is written, it's, and with the effective date following an enactment, this is for the next hire, not relating to anything with current hiring. Is that correct the way it is? If this goes into effect upon signature, or the day after signature, so this is a perspective. I think yesterday I asked about relating to LSOHC, if 19 years from now, there's a vacancy, that's when it kicks in.
Well, Representative Hansen, I would ask Mr. Hubinger if you're asking what the impact of the bill is, or what, Mr. Hubinger. And Representative Hansen, do you have a question for Mr. Hubinger specifically?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Hubinger, is this, the way this is written, is this prospective? Is this that this would, it's not relating to any current hires?
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, the effective date isn't really necessary. It would change the effective date from date of signing if that language was deleted, or that clause was deleted, to July 1st. So it's effectively not very important. House counsel indicate that with respect to the question about this being prospective in nature, that the authority to appoint indicates also the authority to discharge or conduct any other discipline.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And currently, legislative employees are in unclassified service, but they were hired under the conditions of the current statute. So if that statute changes, what's the impact of that, Mr. Hubinger?
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, all legislative branch employees are unclassified and employees that will and can be terminated at any time.
Thank you. Additional follow-up. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this would be directed to Mr. Hubinger. And I know we discussed this a little bit yesterday, but just want to compare how this is compared to the process that we used on the Legislative Water Commission when we were hiring our director there.
Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fisher, if this language were adopted, the process that was used for the Water Commission would be used for both Massard Sams and for the LCCMR.
Okay. Mr. Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was involved with the process that we went through as we set that up, and I very much appreciated the fact how it was handled by the staff. It was a very good process. We had the opportunity, it was very structured so that it was done. I do HR hiring very extensively in our business, and so I felt very comfortable from that point how it was all being handled. And I think it was done in a great way, is to be able to have input from the commission side on a very small scale, to be able to find out what are the finer points that the commission might be able to provide, and also for the candidates to be able to get a little bit better feel of what the commissioners themselves or the people on the different groups are able to provide in that area. So I think this would be a very good way to go.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. We appreciate that.
Members, next we'll move to the A9 amendment. Representative Fabian, I believe the A9 is your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move that amendment.
Representative Fabian, will you explain the A9?
Sure. What we're doing here is on page 3, we're changing the $2.45 million to 2.7. The original request was for $3.5 million, and then on page 7, line 7.3 through 7.16 would be deleted.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. You're deleting a project. Is there anyone in the audience that was a project proposer for this project? If one of you would come forward, that would be great. If you could identify yourself for the record and give us your short testimony, thank you.
Yes, so Mr. Chairman, I'm Jennifer McGuire. I'm a professor of biogeochemistry at the University of St. Thomas and co-principal investigator with Dr. Lewis and John Moriarty, who you heard from earlier.
Do you have any testimony about your project?
So we believe that this project is of good value. I'm not sure where the objectives come in terms of what the problem is, but let me just say that it has a significant educational component. It would train a number of students directly in thinking about water quality systems as they're connected to biological systems in the context of an urban lake, Medicine Lake, which is a nice analog for other types of lakes in the Twin Cities and around. It has a significant management component, so it would have direct outcomes in terms of being able to be implemented in the short term, as well as providing new science and new training.
Professor McGuire, is it Dr. McGuire?
It is.
Thank you. Thank you, Doctor. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. McGuire, did you follow the process, respond to the request for proposals, and go through the hearings, and were there any objections raised during that process?
Dr. McGuire.
Yes, and Representative Hansen, we did go through all processes and we heard no objections during that process that I'm aware of.
Thank you. Additional testimony for the project. Sir, if you could identify yourself for the record.
Once again, Mr. Chair, John Moriarty, Three Rivers Park District. The project also, besides education, it does help urban lake development is a big issue, shoreline development throughout, you know, the metro, but also the Central Lakes region is a bigger and bigger issue. And turtles are a good study organism to figure out how healthy the system is as far as them needing to be able to get up onto the shoreline. So we figured by using this as a study animal, we can come up with good guidelines for conservation for lake development, and especially with the concerns about shoreline buffers and how that's a bigger issue, that these species work out really well to help answer those questions.
Thank you. Just a follow-up. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Fabian, I wasn't quite clear what the objection was to this. If you were on the commission, and why do you want to delete this now?
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it's my intention, from my impression, and from we've heard lots of testimony here in committee over the past few years about, I mean, for me, this is boils down to water quality. And it seems to me that we're duplicating a lot of our other efforts that are going on with regards to water quality from MPCA and DNR and those other types of agencies. If it's about water quality, I think that, you know, those agencies can already be doing this. I see that DNR is a partner in this project. I don't think that it's a project that we need to be doing. And the county, the biological survey that, you know, I've heard about that for 4 years. When they first came in with their proposal, they were asking for 3.5, and we gave them about $1 million less than that. And it's my intention to just try to accelerate that process. We heard that it's, I think you heard the testimony too, that is a project that needs more work.
Representative Hansen.
Well, Mr. Chair, it seems, you know, yes, we do have agencies that are doing analysis. They're measuring the items, you know, what's in the water, what isn't. But, you know, we have a lot of discussion about canaries in the coal mine or prairie canaries, and here this is the urban turtles kind of thing where they can have you can give some, you have water quality impacts, but here we have, what does it mean to life? What does it mean to the animals? And if there are animals that can give us that indication of the impacts, that's real. It's something different than what the agency's doing. It's something that, and I think whether wherever those indicator species are, whether they're in Greater Minnesota or the metro area, they can give us tools that, I think that's what the testifier said, that this indication and maybe the science that's there, we can see some ways to resolve problems. And I see the testifier nodding heads. I'd like maybe the doctor to give us some indication of the purpose of the science here.
Dr. McGuire.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Hansen, Mr. Chair. So to rest assured, I have personally, and we've looked at the data that have been collected by the MPCA, by Three Rivers Park District, and we are using all of the available data that exist. But the water quality data are not sufficient in terms of the spatial resolution or the temporal resolution to be able to get at the interactions. And the reality is we don't know the extent to which some of these issues, road salt, nutrient loading, trace metal loading, impact the turtle species, which is a long-lived species, and I think a good indicator for many other things. So we will be utilizing those data. I don't believe that there will be a duplication of effort. We know those databases, and we've talked with those individuals, and I personally have reviewed those. So I can tell you we will make the best use of all the data that exists. I don't like to collect data other people have collected.
Thank you. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was basically the same. I guess, you know, we've had some discussion earlier about understanding, you know, what contribution to pollution the urban area is making. It seems to me like what I'm hearing is there's some really important scientific information that you're trying to get. Could you just give us a little bit more information about what you're looking at? I think that is the question to me. Like, why would we take out something that might give us, as I understand it, it's not being duplicated. What are we able to look at here? What are you mostly looking at, and specifically from the urban area?
Dr. McGuire.
Sure. So, Representative Clark. And so we will be looking at targeting our water quality sampling specifically to the activities of the turtle populations and three different turtle populations within an urban lake. So we have hypotheses of things that are anthropogenic activities that we may need to include in our management sorts of strategies, and we can look at specific indicators. So, for example, some very simple things like looking at salinity kinds of probes, and there are things that with the university equipment that we already own and the large number of students that we can mobilize, we can actually collect quite large amounts of data that are driven by the biology. So it's not that we're going out and sampling a grid to say, oh, what are the, you know, how is this lake impacted? That's not our charge. Our charge is to really understand the connections between how the water quality indicators are affecting the turtle population in particular, the three turtle populations in particular. So, and those indicators include include nutrients, include trace metals, and also include sort of in situ field parameters, so dissolved oxygen, how much light is penetrating, if you have a lot of turbidity, those kinds of things are all things that we would be able to evaluate in the field in real time at a fairly high spatial resolution. So this is something where we can mobilize a lot of students very quickly and get lots of information. And we don't know exactly what that will be. It will be led by what we find, right? So we have a plan for how to start. And then once we evaluate the most important pieces, we'll follow up on those.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick follow-up.
Representative Clark.
Could you just give a couple of examples of the kind of trace metals or nutrients that you might be looking for that's not being looked at in any of the other work that's being done?
Sure. So,
Dr. McGuire.
Dr. McGuire. Thank you. I'm not used to these things. So we will be looking at, in terms of the nitrogen cycling and the phosphorus cycling within the lake, we'll also be looking at sodium and chloride concentrations as indicators of road salt. And in terms of the trace metal suites, we'll begin in looking specifically at the sediment-water interface, which is something that might be very important for the turtles, but is maybe not the types of sampling that are looked at in other places. We would get a suite using a technology, inductively coupled plasma technology, which is fairly standard technique, and we would be able to look at a number of things, including copper and lead and arsenic and things that might be a problem within the lake sediments. It may not be a problem. We don't know.
Thank you, Dr.
Thank
McGuire.
You, Mr.
Additional
Mr.
follow-up,
Mr.
Representative
Mr.
Clark.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
It.
Representative Purcell, excuse me. Representative Purcell, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just have to speak against the amendment that my good friend Representative Fabian's amendment. We looked at this as it came through the process, and I remember the discussion that we had, and the process is that we review the science that's out there, and as a science guy, I understand a little bit of that. And I believe there's a misunderstanding that we, as scientists, know more than we really do, and how these ecosystems function. And I've had conversations with the DNR on this and MPCA for the last 30-some years in my role as a tribal government scientist. So I very much support this project. If we don't get some understanding, we tend to talk about the grouse and the deer and the fish, and forget about the ecosystem that supports them, and what exactly we know about that. And then all of a sudden we come up and we got this bat issue up north, right? They've been out there for a long time. This white nose syndrome on the bat that we're fighting with, in our, we got this in front of us in our forestry resources now. How come we didn't hear about this 20 years ago? Because we didn't have anybody looking at this stuff. So let's look at this stuff. Let's try to understand a little better so we don't have to have the debate 20 years from now what's going to heck with these ecosystems and how we're going to fix them. Let's start the process now. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor of the A9 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay.
No.
The amendment's adopted. Members, I think what we're going to do, we are going to have to come back tonight. I don't think it's going to be possible to finish. We actually have three amendments yet. Why don't I do, Representative Hansen, do you want to move your amendment? I don't know, that just in case somebody from the public is possibly here in regards to the A11. I think it's non-controversial. It's the same one this body adopted yesterday in regards to Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council.
Mr. Chair, and just we have one member who will not be able to make it. There is, I believe, a testifier on this. I would move the A11 amendment.
Thank you. And Representative Hansen, I do see someone coming forward to speak to the A11. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Darren McBeth with Great Plant Moody, representing Crop Life America. And thank you for your attention. I'll make this quick. Crop Life America represents the crop protection industry and pesticide and crop protection and insecticide technologies to help production agriculture and farmers while respecting the environment and occupational safety and food safety. As you all have heard, probably in the papers, the subject of seed treatments using a neonicotinoid or an insecticide ingredient has become controversial. I don't know if that's me or somebody else. Seed treatments using a neonicotinoid chemical with insecticides have become controversial in how they may or may not affect pollinators or honeybee health and other types of pollinators. And different environmental and scientific reviews examining that topic are underway at the Environmental Protection Agency level, and even with some direction from the legislature last year at the level of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And prejudging outcomes of that and agriculture practices related to that, I think is certainly premature. And I maintain on the behalf of CropLife America, this amendment is more about sending a message of effects on pollinators and neonicotinoids than it is anything substantive. And that is because treated seeds for insecticide crop protection purposes are minuscule in use on state lands that would be acquired under this provision. So I acknowledge that. However, to make a broad statement, to ban those uses in this way is akin to banning, and these crop uses on these types of lands could be for habitat, could be for food plots for wildlife, etc. So, but banning the use of these types of treatments would be akin to banning GMO seeds or requiring all crops on all state lands to be organic, for instance. And that would be a policy determination under your purview, but I think sends the wrong message from the state of Minnesota in supporting technologies and seeds that, by the way, are regulated by EPA and USDA and the Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act, FIFRA, that it sends the wrong message. And so, ironically, I also think for certain projects that LCCMR funds on pollinator health and pollinator habitat, it may behoove those projects to actually use treated seeds and neonicotinoid products to better assess outcomes. So that's my position.
Thank you. And Mr. McBeth, I would encourage you to be involved as the process goes forward. As you noted on line 1.8, it references the section and subdivision that this applies to. Representative Hansen and I are working on language that will change that and make it more workable. You mentioned that sometimes the alternative to a neonic may not be something that we want to go towards. So we are working on language that will make this, I think, more practical, workable. I would like this to go on at this point. Representative Hansen has acknowledged that if we have problems, I don't anticipate this will stay on through the process, but I think it's important that he has my word. I was a co-author on this bill. We have some real problems with it within the industry. There's some things on it that aren't going to work, so we need to fix it. And it's with the understanding as we move through the legislative process that this needs some fixing, and your testimony acknowledges that fact. And so thank you for coming forward. Any more testimony to the A11? Representative Hansen, to your amendment.
Just so the committee knows, this particular provision is a session law amendment, so it's not a statutory one. It rides only with this particular these appropriations. I think Ms. Thornton mentioned that there are $14 million of acquisition in this bill. Representative McNamara and I have heard in testimony on Outdoor Heritage that the DNR has approximately 20,000 acres of crops planted on wildlife management areas. So I think that discussion will continue. And Mr. McBeth, you and I have worked together in the past. I understand the canary in the coal mine because I've just used that analogy, and the camel's nose under the tent and all the other things that get used here at the Capitol. But this is what it is. It's not dealing with GMOs. It's not dealing with other things. It's dealing with the land that we buy with the lottery money, as the one yesterday was the land that was bought with the constitutional dollars. And those have some very specific constitutional purposes. So we're not talking about the 44 million acres in the United States that are treated with neonicotinoid impacted products. We're talking about the land that the public is purchasing with their dollars that they've approved in the Constitution. So I look forward to continuing the discussion.
Thank you. All those in favor of the A11 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted. Members, we're just a couple minutes from being done. I want to let all the members know I'm going to offer testimony potentially will go until 10:02, 10:03. We will not be doing any more votes in the next 5 minutes, but I think there's potential for at least one testifier that came in that could not be available tonight. So I know some of you told me you need to leave at 10 straight up. I don't like going past 10 straight up, but I'm not mistaken. Mr. Nordstrom from Great Plains Institute is here. And Mr. Nordstrom, the amendment you want to speak to, the A10, is going to be up this afternoon. I'm anticipating that we will be back here about 4 o'clock. If that does not work for you, you can come and testify what you have to say now, and your testimony will be limited to 2 minutes right now, or you're welcome to come back when we reconvene, which will be 15 minutes after our floor session ends. Mr. Nordstrom, are you nodding? You will come back.
I would prefer to come back.
Okay. Thank you for your accommodating our schedule. Appreciate that. We have another amendment that deals with MPCA and DNR. Are both commissioners that are in the audience available this afternoon at 4 o'clock, as far as you know, if either one of you is needed to testify? Okay. I think, members, at that point, we are in recess. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just because some of the representatives will perhaps not be back, I want to just express my discomfort in the fact that what we've dismantled from the bill seems so targeted right now. University of Minnesota, University of St. Thomas, Three Rivers Park District, and they're all, as they testified, collaborating with one another, and I think I heard clearly always with the DNR, but our response seems to be government's going to handle it, DNR is going to handle it. So our dismantling of the bill has, for me at least, felt rather targeted at educational institutions and citizen groups that I think have been contributing and working so hard to make our state a better place, and I just needed to express that discomfort.
Thank you, Representative Hausman, for those comments. Members, we'll assume we'll be back in this room 15 minutes after session, and we'll make a floor announcement. Members, we're in recess. Members, I'd like to reconvene the House Environment and Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee. Members, we have two amendments left to adopt for Representative Torkelson's House File 390. The first amendment is we're going to take them in the order of A8 and then A10. There's some folks here for the A8. So if I'm not mistaken, I believe the A8 is Representative Fabian. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciated the work that we did in committee on this. When it started out, it was going to be pretty narrow as to who could get the funding, and we were able to get it changed, so it was going to go a lot more around the state. To finish, I'd like to move this amendment, the A8, if you don't mind, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Fabian.
Thank you. And then on line 22.17, remove the words the pollution control and insert natural resources, and on line 18, remove agent, delete agency. So it winds up just shifting it from pollution control agency to DNR.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. Do either one of the agencies want to testify, or do any members have questions? Representative Hansen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I heard you say we were going to adopt the amendments. I thought we might consider them before we adopted them, but I'll just want to make sure my hearing was right. And I would like to consider the agencies to get on the record and say what they think about this. So.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hausman.
My interest would just be, and I'm assuming maybe the author or someone, because this is the work of the LCCMR, why did they do it this way? Do we know what their presumably they had a reason?
Representative Hausman, both the author of the amendment and the author of the bill serve on LCCMR. Which author were you referring to?
Anyone who might know.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, like I said, in committee, when we first started with this particular item, it was going to be very narrow in that, I don't remember exactly, but I think it was Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth, and Rochester or something. And of course, some of us who are from greater Minnesota had some concerns about that, so we did get it changed to where it is now. It was a proposal that was brought forth by MPCA, but I just think that in this case here, I think that DNR has already demonstrated the capacity and a willingness to do these types of projects, and I just think it fits into their purview.
Anything to add, Representative Torkelson, also a member of the LCCMR.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hausman, as I recall, and my notes are both in my office, I didn't grab them on the way down, but I know that this project did not have full support. I know, in fact, I rated it as a zero on a 0 to 10 scale. So there were many questions about the project as it went through our process, and as Representative Fadim has discussed, there are some misgivings about the way it was set up. There's some good elements to it. We just feel that DNR is probably more appropriate agency for tree planting than the PCA.
Representative Hausman. Follow-up?
No, I just, you know, as I read it, it wasn't clear why it would have initially been put under PCA, so I thought maybe there had been some discussion about that.
Okay. Well, thank you, Representative Hausman. Why don't we have the PCA come down first, as long as it seems like they're one of the ones that are involved here and have had questions asked. Representative Hansen, did you have anything in particular you wanted? Ms. Gauthier, then just remember to identify yourself for the record when Representative Hansen asks the question. Excuse me, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Gauthier. So this is a pollution control agency initiated project that you prepared and went through the process. Is that correct?
Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, yes, that's correct. The PCA went through the LCCMR's process with this proposal and brought it to, in a coalition with a number of other groups, brought it to the LCCMR. And our interest in it is from a clean water standpoint. More urban forestry impacts clean water.
Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair and Ms. Gauthier, so for one of those cooperative folks that you were working with, the Department of Natural Resources?
Ms. Gauthier, could you state your name and position for the record?
I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay.
Chairman.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Greta Gauthier, Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Mr. Chairman and Representative Hansen, yes, we are cooperating in this proposal with the DNR and also with the Department of Health, in addition to other non-state agency partners, including the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association, Conservation Corps, et cetera.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Gauthier. So this amendment, were you aware of the proposal to change the ownership of the work that your agency did before last night, or has there been communication or discussions about changing the ownership of the project that you guys had initiated?
Ms. Gauthier.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hansen, we were aware of the amendment ample time prior to the committee hearing. As to whether or not there had been discussions prior to that, I was not a part of them at the agency, but I can find out if there had been. As far as I know, though, that we did not know that there was a move afoot until the day before when we found out, in plenty of time before the committee hearing.
Additional questions? Does anybody want to hear? Mr. Meyer, does anybody want to hear? Representative Hansen, did you want to hear from DNR also?
Yes.
Commissioner Meyer, if you could come down and identify yourself for the record. And Representative Hans, go ahead. Once you, I was going too fast last time and ended up making us go slower. So identify yourself for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, did if the ownership of this pollution control agency initiated project shifted to the Department of Natural Resources. Would you continue to work with the Pollution Control Agency and perhaps the staff who created it?
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Meyer.
Representative Hansen, yes, we've had conversations since the amendment has been posted that the both agencies feel we can work through this and work together to achieve the outcomes of the project as listed in the proposal.
Representative Hansen.
And Mr. Chair, does for both testifiers, would the amendment impair the ability to conduct the project?
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Gauthier.
Yeah, Representative Hansen. I don't believe so. I believe that we can work together to make sure that the goals and objectives of the project are fulfilled.
Additional questions about the amendment or for either testifier? Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, perhaps Representative Fabian or Dorkison, I just a question of my recollection of being on LCCMR too. Wasn't this an education project, or perhaps maybe Ms. Gauthier, that's my recall that they're going to have young people involved and teaching them about, you know, water quality, et cetera.
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Purcell. Yes, as I understand it, it was the MPCA was going to provide a coordinating function. The DNR and Department of Health were going to provide technical assistance, and there was going to be recruitment of volunteers and training of volunteers by some nonprofits in the U of M, industry expertise from MNLA, and then volunteers that would work with the Conservation Corps in some of the activities of planting trees, watering trees, et cetera. Initially in five areas throughout the state. Now it's going to be an RFP process for 8 to 12 sites across Minnesota.
Representative Purcell.
Well, Mr. Chairman and colleagues here, I was concerned about this project at the outset, that if we keep doing this and we have agencies that are going to cooperate, then they're going to teach young people about water quality, environmental quality, that we're going to have a new generation here that's going to give a darn. And I think that's a concern that, you know, we need to think about seriously.
Thank you. Additional comment to the A8. Representative Fabian, you want to renew your motion?
Yeah, I'd like to renew the motion to move the A8 amendment.
Oh, just an amendment. You don't even need to renew your motion. Any further discussion? It's late in the day. We're all ready to go. Okay. All those in favor of the A8 say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
Nay.
The motion is adopted. Members, we have one more. We have the A10 amendment. I believe it's Representative Neuberger's amendment. Representative Neuberger to the A10 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move this amendment. Starts on page 17. It's pretty simple. it would delete lines 17.1 to 17.12. And then it would make the adjustment here on page 20, line 10, where we would delete the $1 million amount and we would insert the $2 million amount. That's my amendment.
Thank you. We have one person, Mr. Nordstrom, who's wished to testify. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent and give us your testimony.
I will. Thank you. My name is Rolf Nordstrom. I'm the president and CEO of the Great Plains Institute. We're a nonpartisan, nonprofit corporation based here in the Twin Cities that works on energy policy and technology. Mr. Chair, members, thanks very much for the opportunity to be here and just speak briefly to you about this amendment. I'm here to very respectfully speak against the proposed A10 amendment, and I have just really four main points that I want to offer for you to consider. The Great Plains Institute has been part of a broad stakeholder group kind of leading up to this project that has shaped it and still supports this. It's called the Analysis of Minnesota Energy Systems to Develop Future Energy Strategies. That's the name of the project that's being considered to be dropped. And I acknowledge, I think the stakeholders that have been involved don't now and may never agree on one single energy pathway for the state, but everybody feels like it would be important to better understand what the impacts and trade-offs are of various energy pathways that the state might take. And since this diverse group of stakeholders has already been meeting to think through various energy scenarios going out 35 or more years, this study would really be critical to informing those stakeholder discussions so that they're grounded in science and real analysis. And, you know, we recognize that $1 million is real money, but I guess would argue that it's actually quite modest when you compare it to the billions we spend on energy every year. And, you know, as my dad used to say, this feels like sort of a measure twice and cut once opportunity by doing this study, getting a better bead on how the energy system might evolve in this state, especially given that we don't have a lot of native resources here, at least conventional energy resources. Second main point I'd like to offer is that I think this study would enable the kind of scenario planning that our military and that some of the world's largest companies use routinely to navigate the future. Minnesota has some big energy decisions in front of it in the next, say, three decades, so there's really no such thing as doing nothing. And I just, as an example, the nuclear fleet in Minnesota is going to reach the end of its, those plants will reach the end of their licenses in the early 2030s. 2033, which is going to leave a big gap in our generation, and we're going to need to figure out how best to fill that gap, and I think this kind of study could help us do that. And given the long lifetimes of energy assets and the long lead times you need to plan, now is actually not too soon to be thinking about even the 2030s, even though that may sound far away. Minnesota's, half of Minnesota's coal plants are 40 years old or more, or will be by 2017. And I don't need to tell this body, you probably know it better than I do, that we've had some infrastructure constraints with propane and getting coal where it needs to go just this last year. And the challenge is not that there are not enough of those fuels in the country. The challenge is getting them from where they are to where they're needed in Minnesota. And I think a study like this could help us figure out what are our options for the state being a little less vulnerable to these outside market forces that we don't, frankly, have a lot of control over. Third main point, you know, we believe strongly that interstate and international trade is a great thing, but given that we spend more than $18 billion a year in Minnesota on outside sources of energy, we really think that both the state's economy and our energy security could benefit from at least evaluating whether or not we might use more of our in-state resources to meet a greater proportion of our needs. Maybe put another way, we see this energy study, this energy future study, as being a kind of tool for revealing economic development opportunities in the state that are energy related, and growing an already large advanced energy economy, and as I said, maybe improving our energy security at the same time. And then I guess the final point that I would just ask you to consider, you know, at the end of the day, we really see this energy future study as being a risk management tool and as a way for the state to figure out how best to hedge against volatile fossil fuel prices. I mean, if you think about natural gas 10 years ago, it was $12 or $14 an MMBTU. You know, now it happens to be $3. But the point is that history has shown that it can be really quite volatile. And, of course, the same is true for oil. I mean, it's incredibly cheap at the moment, but does anybody believe that over the next 30, 50 years it's going to be that cheap? So, you know, Xcel Energy already uses, as just as an example, uses wind to hedge against volatile natural gas prices. I guess I'm arguing, I think this kind of study that would look out far enough could help Minnesota as a state hedge also against that volatility. And with that, Mr. Chair, members, thank you again for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Nordstrom. Questions for Mr. Nordstrom? Representative Hornstein.
Well, thank you, Mr. Nordstrom, and I just have a concern about this amendment. I look at it, and you know what you're doing, and maybe you could comment a little about this, is maximizing energy efficiency. You know, this is something that historically we've all agreed on bipartisanly, that the best and most effective and cheapest and cleanest way to address our energy problem is by conserving it and using it more efficiently. And this is one of the key parts, I understand, of your strategy. So, you know, maybe you could comment a little bit more about this. I was at a Minnesota Environmental Initiative gathering a couple weeks ago, and this was one of the consensus on the panel, is that, you know, this is something we can work together on as a legislature. We haven't, you know, we had this energy efficiency standard in place a few years ago. It's very modest. I think we can do much better than that. So if you could comment a little bit more about your thinking about that question, because, you know, why we would not support that is puzzling to me.
Thank
you, Mr. Nordstrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, it's a great question. I guess I would say the study, this energy future study, actually doesn't presume any particular generation mix, really even including energy efficiency, although I think the starting assumptions for it are that getting more efficient as an economy would just help us be more competitive. So I think it does assume that energy efficiency will have to increase dramatically over the next, you know, decades. But building on that, I think the value of this is that it would help the state know what its options are in a kind of intellectually honest, dispassionate way, and in a way that's analytically grounded. Again, in the same way that, you know, Royal Dutch Shell made famous this idea of scenario planning, looking at various ways the world could unfold and then trying to figure out what are the strategies they could take as a company that are no regrets, that would position them well no matter which future unfolded. I think this energy study is much the same.
Follow-up, Representative Hornstein.
Well, thank you. I mean, not necessarily for the testifier, but perhaps the author of the amendment, but maybe the others have questions of the testifier, so I could hold off if that's the case.
Okay. Other questions for the testifier? Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Nordstrom, is there anybody else doing this work if we take this money away from you?
Mr. Nordstrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, do you mean anybody else in Minnesota or anybody else in the nation or world?
Well, Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, in Minnesota, doing the analysis of the Minnesota energy system.
Mr. Nordstrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, there is nobody else doing this work in Minnesota. I mean, there are other states that are doing similar kinds of work and other countries doing similar kind of long-term analysis, but nobody in Minnesota, really.
Thank you.
Thank you. Additional questions for Mr. Nordstrom? Additional question. Representative Newberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Nordstrom, for coming down here. You're on the hot seat, and I appreciate your courage. When I looked at this bill, I just want to be clear that the issue at hand is not the taking one side of the energy issue or the other. Clearly, we have our opinions, and I respect your opinion. I respect your passion in this area. When I look at this, really what we're dealing with is just a limited amount of money that we have to deal with this fund, and where we can best spend it. And so as I kind of unpacked this issue here, and especially this allocation, I got some notes here. This alone, this one grant would consume about 30%, over 30% of the entire 7th subdivision. It's a duplicative study. You said that you weren't sure if anything was done in Minnesota, but then you were real careful because you said really. I mean, you kind of qualified your statement on the end there, which is good because you didn't paint yourself into a corner, and I appreciate that. There have been many studies that have been done, and there are many places where we can have these studies done. There are agencies and groups that are more than willing to facilitate this. The other thing was when I looked at this, so there's really no immediate improvement to our environment with this. Yes, it's another $1 million study, okay. And my thought was why should we spend $1 million for another duplicative type of study, or we can spend $1 million right now and do something very tangible for the environment. And the money would go to the to Bowser and also to the water districts. And we have a goal of reducing nitrates, nitrogen, in our surface waters by 20% this year. This is an opportunity for us to make a real difference right now. Am I saying that Am I saying that your study is a waste of money? Well, we all have opinions, okay? But suffice to say, in the here and now and in the context of what I'm trying to get to, is that we only have a little bit of money, so let's put it to its best use. And in the here and now, giving an additional $1 million to clean up our waters, to me, that's worth the amendment. As far as the studies are concerned, there have been, you know, as Representative Clark kind of touched on, and as you did too, there are many pre-existing opinions that exist already, and there are areas, like I said, that will grant money for this. Right now, the Department of Commerce, they're engaged in doing this. The Citizens League, I did my homework. The Citizens League, they've done multiple studies along these lines. They did one on the 9th of August, 2012. They did one on the 23rd of March, 2004, so they were back doing it then, and also in June of 2008. The Department of Health and the EPA have been deeply involved. I researched your organization, the Great Plains Institute, and you've done a tremendous job with your organization, and you've done quite a bit of work in this area yourself. So, you know, my hat's off to you for following your passion there. There are other groups such as Representative Hornstein's involved with Minnesota 350. I researched them as well, and they are very deeply involved in learning and study and doing studies on this issue. Growth and Justice, that's another group. They did one in October of 2012. The Center for Transportation Studies did one in April of 2012. The EQB did extensive comments about this issue, 921 of 11, the Isaac Walton League, January of 2009. I've got a list, I mean, here. I could go through this. I mean, these are all duplicative studies that really cover the same material. God bless them for doing it. So I'm not. It's not that there's a lack of information that's out there. Simply, just boiling it back to, I'm not here to argue the issue, your side or mine. I'm just saying there's only so much money, and this issue has been researched in depth. So let's take this $1 million and clean up our waters. That's what this is about. Thank you,
Representative Clark.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just, since I was the one who asked if there was anybody else doing this, I'd just like to give the witness, Mr. Nordstrom, the chance to say if he thinks this is duplicative, but just because he might say it's duplicative. All these different groups don't, by their doing work on this issue, doesn't make it a duplicate. I want to know the question, just to reiterate it again, is anybody doing this analysis in this way? I don't know how else to say it. Do you think this is duplicative? If it's not, please just state the case of why it's not. I just think we need to know one way or the other. I would just like to get that clarified. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Nartz.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, I mean, obviously, that's sort of a tricky question for me because I wouldn't be here if I thought it was duplicative. So I don't think it is. I appreciate what Representative Neuberger says. I think there are lots and lots of studies by lots of different groups on different pieces of the energy question and even the energy future. I think what distinguishes this proposed study is that it wouldn't just be looking at one sector of the energy system. So often a study will look just at the electricity sector or just at transportation or just at heating and cooling. This proposes to look across the entire energy system and to look, not just look out far enough, but to have real sort of engineering level analytical work done so that we really understand in a clearer way, in a more grounded way, what options we have going forward. And I think if it were just a study that was going to sit by itself and collect dust somewhere, I think it wouldn't be worth doing. What the real value I see in the study is to inform this broader public engagement and stakeholder process that's already underway. In other words, a way to inform what those public interests are already talking about, and to see if we could get a broader consensus among Minnesotans on, you know, what are the most promising energy trajectories for the state. And if I may, just even though this is in response to Representative Neuberger, and I'm sorry if I'm getting your name wrong.
I get called on kinds of things.
I really appreciate what you said, and I recognize that using the money for this means there's an opportunity cost. I mean, if we use it for this, that means it doesn't go to clean water, and I'm certainly not here to speak against cleaning up our waters. I just think that this is an opportunity to spend still a relatively modest amount of money given the size of the energy system and the sort of long-lived nature of those energy decisions in thinking now about how we're going to fill these generation gaps in the future.
Follow-up, Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, I just noticed that the language does call for a request for proposals for anyone who wants to do this, and I guess if there were, I mean, that to me is a positive thing. You also talked about community engagement. Can you expand on community engagement? That's not mentioned here that I see.
Mr. Nordstrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Clark, I mean, I'm in danger here a little bit of putting words in the Legislative Energy Commission's mouth, because they've really been, the responsibility for this study was given to them, and so they've been guiding and shepherding this process. But my understanding is that they're thinking of that public engagement part as having sort of three different parts to it. There's been a leadership team that's been meeting that involved the Chamber of Commerce and Xcel Energy and Cummins Power and others. And then maybe if you think about one concentric circle out from that, the idea is to engage people from around the state in thinking about sort of presenting to them, here are the energy challenges Minnesota is going to face over the next several decades, and beginning to build and providing sort of a common base of information for people to help think about how to address those challenges going forward. And then maybe the furthest out circle, you know, even broader public engagement in a variety of ways, again, to see if we couldn't get sort of a broader consensus in the state on how best to address our energy needs going forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gentlemen, what's your name again?
Rolf Nordstrom.
Nordstrom.
Just think of the department store. Sadly unrelated.
Representative Purcell.
You wouldn't need money then anyway.
Yeah.
The studies that Representative Neuberger referred to, and I'm thinking back to the process we use in LCCMR, and then we evaluate projects as they're brought forward, and there's a review process, and I presume that you're familiar with some of the work that Representative Neuberger talked about that's been done by various groups, and we aren't looking for redundancy, and I know that's assessed when we look at LCCMR projects, I don't know if this was a peer review process, but certainly some of these are probably out in the jury journals, if you will. But is this is something you're looking to build on, what you know to be a body of evidence that exists right now.
Mr. Nordstrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Purcell. I mean, I think it's true that there's quite a bit of information on what Minnesota's current energy system looks like, and some various studies that look at, as I said before, particular pieces of it going forward. And this study would obviously build on that, but I think it's just a qualitatively different thing than what's been done before. And you know, I recognize that when you tell people, in fact, when we were first talking about this idea, if you tell people you want to do a study, it tends to elicit a collective yawn. Like, really? Another study? Is that what the world needs, is another study? I totally get that. But I think that what's different here, as I said, is that it would be not just another analytical study, but connected to this broader engagement process, and hold hope for helping to inform people enough that they could help identify what are the most promising paths for Minnesota to take. Because, as I said, you know, we're going to have coal plants getting even older, more than 40 years old, these nuclear plants retiring. We're going to have to figure out as a state how best to fill those gaps, and it seems like now is a good time to be thinking critically and analytically about what the options are for the state, and I think this study would help us do that.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just, a final comment, a question, too. Arguably, what we do with our energy and how we generate our energy resources can and will impact water quality.
Absolutely. Almost Mr.
Nordstrom.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. Mr. Chair, Representative Purcell, there's actually almost, I can't think of any form of energy that doesn't require water, and both in the production of the energy and in its use. So, and people talk about this sort of water-energy nexus, so they're very intimately intertwined.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just would have to, I'm speaking against the amendment.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate your naming these studies, Representative Neuberger. And I'm familiar with some, not all of them. And I want to just remind folks that, you know, this is the air quality, climate change, and renewable energy section of this bill. And Representative Neuberger, you talked about some of the different, you know, there's other parts of this bill, and you had some concerns about, you know, the amount of money in the study. But it's really appropriate that we do this study in this section of the bill because it relates very closely to these other policies that we're pursuing. And the one study that I don't think you mentioned, which, you know, comes perhaps the closest to what they're doing, but I think this even seems perhaps even more comprehensive, is about 7 years ago there was the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group. And that looked at all kinds of different sectors. We had business and government and environmental groups with a lot of different stakeholders, and they came up with a number of different recommendations. You know, unfortunately, I think those are way out of date. So much has changed in 7 years. You know, the latest IPCC report, that's the International Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, is talking about how this problem is accelerating. And, you know, as Mr. Nordstrom mentioned, we've had just regionally a lot of changes in energy policy. And there's a lot of urgency right now to this whole climate question. So, you know, a 7-year-old study is not going to cut it. And so I think there's a lot of important data that we can glean out of this. I think that it's very timely and again urgent, and again I don't think these studies are nearly as comprehensive as you're proposing. And the one we had 7 years ago, we actually had some good policy come out of that, but it's dated, and so much has changed in 7 years, particularly on the climate and energy issues. So I want to emphasize the urgency of doing this and speak against the amendment and for the study, because you know, we really have a lot of important work we have to do. We're falling behind. And the last thing I'll say, Mr. Chair, is we just had the Pollution Control Agency in here last week. And the PCA said, hey, look, we are falling very, very short of our legislatively mandated goals on greenhouse gas reduction. This is a real weakness in our state's environmental policy. The PCA admitted it. And so, again, that's one more reason why we need this and why we need to get this this issue addressed.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Nordstrom. I don't know if anyone else has questions for him, but I, you know, we're talking about the different studies, and I think there's maybe a misperception that you're the person that's going to receive the this is going to the Legislative Energy Commission, which we have the Legislative Audit Commission, now the Legislative Water Commission, the Legislative Commission on Minnesota Resources, all these legislative commissions, so that they're fair and balanced, equal in terms of their representation, so that we can sort out all the interest groups' studies, all the interest groups' advocacy, from whichever side they're at, that we ask those commissions to set the table for us, because we're here for a couple hours or maybe 45 minutes to discover this, but the process that was put together, one, by another legislative commission, was to set the table by vetting and finding out which parts of the menu are going to meet our liking when they bring it here to the legislative process. So, you know, we've been ordering off the menu all day here with this commission, or this committee. We ordered off the menu yesterday. And I respect the advocacy on all the sides of this, but energy, climate change, energy efficiency, these are huge issues for our time. And they really aren't a large portion, comparably, to what's in front of us, because the folks we task with bringing us and setting the table get balanced to have a bill that they can recommend and bring to us. And making a big change like this disrupts that balance. it misses that opportunity to have the newly created, relatively newly created Energy Commission come back to us with data that we can trust. So if we're making changes to recommendations all the time, we're going to be the whole question of whether we should have these outside commissions is really up in the question, because we got all the advocacy groups in the room for all the sides. We have all the lobbyists are always here, but we need to be able to have the public interest protected. And that's by doing things in the public, through the process, in a public vein. The lobbyists in the room can always connect with us. They seem to always find us, whether we want to be found or not. But the Legislative Energy Commission would have the trust that we could put into it to debate this just like we're debating this now. And Mr. Chair, I think you know I strongly support soil and water conservation districts and have been in it, but they're getting $1 million in here. They're on the menu, but they are they have the portion that they had asked for. So, Mr. Nordstrom, is there anything like the Legislative Energy Commission in any of the states that you work in where there's a bipartisan, bicameral, balanced commission?
Mr. Nordstrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I'm to be honest, I don't have an encyclopedic knowledge of the legislative arrangements in all the other states, so I can't really give a good answer to that. I would just say that part of the appeal for us, since we're a nonpartisan nonprofit, we definitely do have a point of view on the energy system, and that is that long-term it ought to be both economically and environmentally sustainable. But beyond that, we don't really have a dog in the hunt here. Part of what we liked about the study and do like about the study is precisely that it was given to the Legislative Energy Commission because it felt like there it would be exposed to both Republicans and Democrats, it would be an open process because it's a public body, and that whatever came out of it could actually be trusted by the legislature broadly because it would have been sort of vetted and shepherded by a legislative body. So, you know, as I say, I'm here testifying not because this money is going to come to us, but just because we think it's in the public interest to do this study. And I frankly worry that if we don't do something like this study, we're just going to sort of back into our energy future. We're not really going to shape it. It's just going to happen to us because things are changing so quickly technologically in the energy space.
I think Representative Hansen.
Well, and Mr. Chair and Mr. Nordstrom, if the amendment goes through, there's no dog or hunt, you know, because it's done. And we'd have to wait again. I would, Mr. Chair, when there's done with Mr. Nordstrom with questions, to hear from the Energy Commission. I think they're in the audience, and maybe the SWCDs as well.
Okay, thank you. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe I may be the only one sitting around the table who actually serves on the Legislative Energy Commission and have for the last 2 years. And I will tell you that it is, and we'll have Ms. Fault come up and describe it maybe a little bit more specifically, but it is a bicameral, bipartisan group of legislators, senators, and representatives. I would say, have quite a spectrum of views and opinions. Representative Neuberger talked about this. You know, we can all have our opinions. I would say that, you know, one of the things that, I will say, I'm not necessarily the strongest advocate of the extremes. I'm kind of trying to find how do we make the most common sense good decisions about energy policy, about the environmental policies, about agricultural policies. I think we need to be able to come together and have good discussion about that. And I will tell you, I think that there are people that serve on that commission that we do have different opinions about things. One of the pieces of this that appeals to me is that this isn't about opinion. This is about data collection and actually analysis so that you're coming up with a plan, you're coming up with information, you're doing good background investigations, so you come up with something that can lead to good future policy. And I think that we owe it to ourselves
and frankly, we owe it to my children and grandchildren that we are doing good public policy long into the future when it comes to agriculture, environment, and energy. And that's again, the appeal of the commission is that it brings together those groups of people that might have an interest in different areas, but it's talking about how can we come up with a good long-term energy policy that we will all be able to hopefully see eye to eye for the most part on. So I appreciate you, Mr. Nordstrom, Great Plains Institute. I've worked with some of your staff on other issues, and I very much appreciate the work that you do and that they do to promote good policy and good future considerations about how we will sustain our state and the world moving forward. So thank you for being here and for presenting. But I did want to bring the Legislative Energy Commission. I appreciate that Representative Hansen asked Ms. Falk to be able to come down, and if she will be able to just describe how this came to be and maybe a little bit more about the Energy Commission, I'd ask her to do that. Mr. Chair.
Thank you. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent, and then go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representatives. My name is Annie Levinson-Falk. I am the Executive Director of the Legislative Energy Commission. That is a nonpartisan staff position of the joint employee of the, both the House and the Senate. The impetus for this study, as Mr. Nordstrom mentioned, it is a piece of the plan to comply with the duties of the LEC by the Legislative Energy Commission under Minnesota Statute Section 3.8852, which requires the LEC to develop basically a framework for Minnesota's energy future. And I was not here in 2013 when that was passed, but my understanding is that comes from a desire to have better understanding of energy options by legislators and other decision makers and the likely impacts and trade-offs that are going to go along with some of the choices in front of us. I think the belief was that, as Mr. Nordstrom said, there are a lot of difficult decisions to be made, and legislators wanted to be better informed about those decisions. That at least I can speak for the core team of stakeholders that we have had preparing this, the plan for this study and the associated stakeholder and citizen engagement parts of it, and that is the motivation behind the organizations that have chosen to participate and the reason that they want to be a part of this framework. To the LEC in general, it is a commission of 10 members of the House, 10 members of the Senate, and it includes legislators who serve on the Energy Committee, Environment and Natural Resources, Agriculture, Transportation, as well as the Next Gen Energy Board. And it's intended to be a body where that brings together policy perspectives and expertise across all of those areas, to think more deeply and more long-term about some of the really difficult energy policy decisions that we have. And to do it in an integrated way across those various policy areas. We do a lot of work during the interim when legislators have a little bit more time to think about bigger picture issues.
Thank you. Follow-up, Representative Poppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Levinson-Falk, for coming forward and talking about that. I know that early on you and I had a conversation before I actually got started, and we just talked in depth a little bit about what kind of the roadmap for the Legislative Energy Commission, and I believe I recall that there wasn't necessarily a determined outcome expected, and what you actually were going to hopefully bring to the table was the opportunity for all of us to be able to be heard and come together. And I appreciate the work that you've done over the last 2 years. And there may be others around the table that are on the commission, but I just appreciate that it's a wide variety of legislators with, again, differing opinions. But I think we came together understanding that we would hear from experts, we would learn about energy policy, and we'd be able to help to determine a good future that would make good common sense and be long-lasting. So I appreciate that you came forward for that. Thank you.
Additional comments? Okay, thank you. Any additional questions? Members, all those in favor of the... Go ahead. Representative Hansen. Okay, roll call has been requested. McNamara votes aye.
Clark.
No.
Cornish.
Aye.
Dill. Fabian.
Aye.
Fenton.
Aye.
Fisher. Green. Hackbarth.
Aye.
Hancock.
Aye.
Hansen.
No.
Hausman.
No.
Heintzman.
Aye.
Hornstein.
No.
Johnson.
No.
Neuberger.
Aye.
Grissel.
No.
Poppy.
No.
Rarick.
Aye.
Torkelson.
Aye.
Uglum.
Aye.
There being 11 ayes and 7 nays, the amendment is adopted. To the bill, any additional questions? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd ask for a roll call on the bill and have a couple comments.
Go ahead, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and you know, I'd mentioned this in my earlier comments, but we're at now, I think, 3 or 4 substantive changes to the LCCMR bill. We task these commissions to do the work and present us with options based on the work of hearing each of these in depth. We have in the past changed recommendations. I think when our side of the aisle has been in charge, we've maybe changed one time each bill. But this is quite a bit of change, quite a bit of money. But also moving away from dealing with clean energy, one of the most important issues of our time, both in terms of the climate, but also in terms of money. I mean, I just saw a blurb today that our sister state that we were told we should be emulating with oil, it's got a $4 billion hole in their budget because of the drop in oil revenues. So balancing the budgets, dealing with energy, dealing with what the future is going to look like, this last amendment was really a mistake. There were other mistakes during the day. I know that this bill will pass and it will go, but I don't think it's the right thing to do in terms of the content that was changed, not only the process, but the content of the things that were changed. Sets a bad precedent, but also we're missing opportunities to look at our environment, our energy future, our water quality. We abandoned the turtles. We abandoned the Raptor Center, and now we're abandoning looking at data for clean energy. So I would encourage a no vote on the bill.
Additional comments. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am going to be voting for the bill, but it's I want to express a disappointment. I'm new to the Finance Committee and relatively new in the House, and so this is a learning experience for me, and my disappointments are basically two. One is that I've got to believe that these projects were better vetted by the LCCMR in their processes than what we're doing today. And I genuinely value the input and the knowledge and the experience of the people who sit on that committee, especially the citizens who are involved. And we've walked away from them. But I'm also deeply disappointed by, we're walking away from knowledge. The case of the energy study, that makes good sense. And so rarely can we put together and have the long view. As I age, I more appreciate the long view, and I think too often in politics and in the House, we find ourselves in the short term view, And I find myself wanting to see more of the long-term view. And we walked away from that just a few moments ago. And earlier today, I thought the turtle study was excellent. It reminds me of, granted, it's a small study and all that, but it wasn't that long ago when there was a bunch of high school students up in Henderson, Minnesota, who discovered some frogs that didn't look right. And it really led to an extensive study about frogs being, in this case, another canary in the coal mine, whereby their ecosystem, the ecology related to that, really raised some questions about what we were doing environmentally. And those frogs were important. And those were just little frogs discovered by high school students. I think the students at St. Thomas could have really helped us understand by observing the turtles, is there an impact on what they're seeking to study? And I think we're making a mistake by doing that. I'll admit that a major part of my motivation for voting for this bill is that they're moving some bison over to Minneopa State Park, which is in my backyard. And that is the kind of progressive thing we need to do, whereby we're splitting a very important herd of bison. One of the most natural herds in America, and we're actually protecting the value of that genetic base by splitting it up from Blue Mountain and sending some of them over to Minneopa State Park. But I'll be voting for it, but again, I'll be disappointed.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to thank the members of the committee for their hard work today. We have this bill is substantially the way it came out of the LCCMR. We've made some changes that are appropriate in most of our eyes. It's still a very good bill, supporting great projects all across the state of Minnesota. I renew my motion that the bill be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations.
And that's House File 390 as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Clerk will call the roll. McNamara votes aye.
Clark.
No.
Cornish.
Aye.
Dill. Fabian.
Aye.
Fenton.
Aye.
Fisher. Green. Hackbart.
Aye.
Hancock.
Aye.
Hansen.
No.
Houseman.
No.
Heintzman.
Aye.
Hornstein.
No.
Johnson.
Aye.
Neuberger.
Aye.
Purcell.
Aye.
Poppy.
No.
Rarick.
Aye.
Torkelson.
Aye.
Uglum.
Aye.
Both Representative Green and Representative Dill were excused for this afternoon's meeting. I'm sorry, Representative Hansen, was there one more member excused?
Peter Fisher was, and I think he was excused when we were in session, so I want to make sure he's...
And I apologize. I was trying to think of who else it was. Thank you. So all three members have been excused. There being 13 ayes and 5 nays, the bill is passed and re-referred to GovOps. Thank you, members, for coming back this afternoon. We'll be back in this committee Tuesday morning. We're adjourned.